Welcome back to the Art of Suffering podcast with Dalton Darnell. Today we have Roy Gillum, and I do know this guy from Adam. Usually I don't know my guests at all, but I've met Roy on a couple of different occasions at Ropens and stuff, and I heard his testimony, him and his wife's, man, what was that, 4 years ago? 3 years ago now?
Yeah, I think three probably.
Had to be, yeah, had to be three now because Waylon's just now, he turns three this year. So anyways, I would like to welcome Roy to the podcast, man. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thanks, sir, and I appreciate it. And I want to say right off the bat that I'm proud of you for what you're doing, following the calling of the Lord in a platform that he's giving you to speak into the lives of people is awesome, and it's going to be highly motivational. I think there's going to be a lot of benefit and fruit in your life as well as in a lot of us that are listening and living somewhat parallel lives, I imagine. And even if we don't know each other, I think we're gaining a lot from it.
Mm-hmm. Hey man, thank you so much. It's been a, I was just thinking, Roy was just telling me before we started recording that his wife is getting into the podcast space. What's it called again? Heritage?
Home, Heritage, and Hope.
Okay, Home, Heritage, and Hope. And the first thought that came to my mind, dude, is the attacks from the enemy since I started this thing. I was like, shoot, I thought I was starting a podcast, which is like a side gig, but the enemy has hated this thing, and which is awesome. But it has been a long year, dude. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah. 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 I think anytime we venture out of living for self and into what God really wants for us and making an effect for the kingdom, we set ourselves up for a target. Mm-hmm. And so, and we, I guess I feel like we've been in that space quite a bit, in various capacities of things we've done in life, trying to be on mission and living beyond just the day-to-day grind of ourselves and our selfish nature of opening our home for quite a few years in various capacities of ministry, just lay type stuff. Like youth groups, and our big thing we do now is a college ministry that meets every other week. We've got a local junior college, and that crew, that's called Cowboy Up Round Pen. And that ministry actually started close to 40 years ago. Great friend of my family, Frank Waitley, who is kind of a local cowboy icon and a great, just a mentor for me for years and years, that he started the ministry. And way back when Brandy and I were, she says it was when we were dating. I thought it was right after we were married, but I said, if we ever end up back home on the family ranch, I think it would be really neat to become a part of what Frank is doing. And as time went along, that's exactly what happened. We've been in the ministry for 10 years, I think now, 11 maybe. And it's a powerful deal to speak into the lives of young adults that are out on their own for the first time. And the world is open to them. Every temptation is available, and trying to figure out how to live a life that is purposeful and useful and beyond themselves is it's really fun. This year is going really well. We're having 25 kids show up and sit in our living room and feed them and sit around and visit and have a word from the straight out of scripture. So,
man, that's awesome. 25 kids. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That college can't be that big. It's just a junior college.
Right. Right. I'm not sure even what the school population is, a couple thousand, but.
That's awesome. Well, Roy, kind of get us started with, it sounds like I know you're from Colorado, but kind of tell people where you're from, kind of where you grew up, you know, what were your folks like and, And because you grew up doing this stuff, didn't you?
Right. Yeah. So we've been here in Northeast Colorado, a little dot on the map called Pete's, Colorado. Mm-hmm. So not mountainous, not trees. We're flat country, short grass prairie. But actually, my family's been ranching here for about 107 years. My great granddad started the place, and there's some really cool stories about things that he actually grew during the Depression while other people were starving out and closing up. He had enough scraped together. I don't think it was easy for him, but there were times when he had enough scraped together, or he had enough friendship and goodwill with his neighbors that he actually was able to grow. There's a cool story that there was a guy that came to him and said, his name was Roy as well. And he said, "Roy, I've got a job riding Border Patrol in South Texas," if you can believe it at the time. "And, but I can't afford to get my family there. So if you can rent me a box car, and I will just sign the deed over to this piece of ground that I've got here." And so he was able to do that. And so some neat stories, some neat history around here. But yeah, so I grew up, started in town, in the town of Pete's. And when I was 4 years old, my grandpa told my dad, "You got to get those boys out here on the ranch." And so we switched houses in a day. They had it all packed up. And I remember that when we got to move out here and live in the main house on the ranch when I was a kid. And so from there, I guess just was kind of horse crazy from the time I was a kid. I told people I wanted to be a mountain man. But that resulted, I think, from like the man from Snowy River. They called him like he was one of the mountain guys. And
yeah.
And what I really loved was the horses. Mm-hmm. Is like he was able to go and ride and do things that a lot of them didn't do when he was cruising down that mountain. Mm-hmm. And gathering all those mares and stuff. So that got me pretty excited. And so that was kind of always on my mind. I guess to answer your question, while I was growing up, I was blessed to grow up in a family that was faithful for mm-hmm. some generations, actually, on both sides for the most part. Mm-hmm. And so when people would ask me what my testimony was, for quite a while I felt like, well, I really don't have one of these mm-hmm. awesome testimonies of extreme change. Like I grew mm-hmm. up, for the most part, I had some rebellion in places and things, but for the most part, having a good influence of good moral character and what that meant and the purpose for that. And actually struggled at times to identify my salvation in a way, because I remember praying a prayer when I was 4 years old, and I believe I meant it at the time, mm-hmm. but there's a lot that's, you know, naive and innocent. Mm-hmm. And so what I've come to believe, though, is that that is a powerful testimony, and that's what we need to really be striving for as we move mm-hmm. generations forward, is that that our kids and our grandkids don't have the type of testimony that is this shockingly life-changing.
That's the goal.
Because they know it. They lived it. They were just thriving in that, what a Christian family can look like mm-hmm. from the very beginning.
Well, there's this guy I had on the other day, Roy, and I'm going to interject this in here because you're going to freaking love this. Like, this is perfect. And when he was young, like in the 90s, his mom took him to a bunch of Buck clinics, Buck Brandeman clinics. And okay. he said that one time this lady walks up to Buck and says, so what do you do if your horse does this? Insert some ridiculous bad behavior here, you know? And he said Buck's response was, my horses will never do that.
Right.
As if to say, I'm not going to put the spot in them. They're not going to do it. You know, and the lady was like, well, come on. I mean, what if? There's no what if. And that's literally my goal with my kids. I'm like, all right. Like, let's just know the principles. Let's know that your identity in Christ. And like, sure, we're going to screw up and that's fine. Those are just opportunities to learn. But like a kid growing up in my home, my hope is that they will never be able to say, I do not know Jesus, you know?
Yep.
So I agree with you. That's what your parents did is the goal, dude. And that is what we're hunting.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I guess to extend that thought, maybe I'll backtrack a little bit to get where I'm going, but Brandy and I, so I met Brandy the night before classes started my freshman year of college.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't start dating right away, and we dated too long. If I had it over to do again, I would have married her a lot quicker.
Me too.
But I had this thought of, like, got to be in a career, got to be, you know, mm-hmm. able to provide. And there's some merit to that, but I think mostly we were still kids when we got married, but even so, it would have been, that time would have been real powerful if we mm-hmm. had just gotten married when we knew that was the direction we were headed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was 22 years ago. And so that's plenty of time for highs and lows and business and health and our marriage relationship and everything else. But as far as what you're talking about, the impression we have on our kids, I intended always to raise kids in that Christian environment for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But our goal, our plan, I guess I'll say our plan was that whatever our youngest child was, that was the point. Well, we thought it was important for Brandy to be home when they were little. And, mm-hmm. But she's super motivated, super capable. And, the plan was for her to go back to a career teaching anatomy at a university or whatever it would be. But as soon as the youngest one was in school, that was the deal. And, mm-hmm. And so our oldest went to kindergarten and had a good experience at our little school. That was part of why we moved back home to Northeast Colorado, was because we had what we felt was a good school and a tight community and things. And in a lot of ways, that's true. But during that time, so we had two boys and my wife went around with cancer and came out of that deal. And the heartbreaking thing to her was that they said that during that, because of the chemo that she had to be on, we would never be able to have more kids. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of working through that deal. And Jake starts kindergarten. And then she comes to me as she's healing up from chemo and says, Roy, what do you think about homeschooling? And mm-hmm. My response was, why?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, because of the Lord, it's something that she had a dream about, our basement actually, and saw it as kind of a classroom. And, so we get to talking about this and praying about it and went to it's called the Rocky Mountain Homeschool Conference. It happens in June every year in Denver. And that was the first time, that first conference I went to, just completely changed my perspective of what it means to disciple your children.
Mm-hmm.
And what is education?
Mm-hmm.
Those two things. And, so from there, I had no doubt, no question about my wife's ability to teach our children. Mm-hmm. It was just a process for me of breaking paradigms of what is education.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's all leading into the idea that you talked about of raising our children in the faith and having that impression on them. So that's why we have homeschooled from then on. And Jake mm-hmm. is, he's 17 now, and he is doing some classes at the junior college, getting an agriculture certificate. But
mm-hmm.
That experience, that time with our children has just been phenomenal. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of reasons that beyond of, as far as starting to question the system and what the government is feeding kids and why so many are thinking a particular way,
mm-hmm.
And things, but having that time of true discipleship training as part of education, because, man,
it should be.
Yeah. We just love it. There's,
mm-hmm.
I hear parents that talk about, like, during Christmas break, for example, or something, or they'll say, man, I can't wait for the kids to go back to school.
Dude.
And I'm like, man, you're doing it wrong. What? If that's the way you yes. feel, you're doing it wrong, because if you don't like hanging out with your kids, then why should anybody else?
What? And yeah, dude. I know. You're not
training them up well at home where they're a joy for other people to be around.
Gosh.
You're setting them up for failure in every capacity of life that they're going to try to enter into.
Oh, no question, dude. I tell Wiley all the time, I'm like, hey, bro, you're being annoying. You know why? Because he is. I'm mm-hmm. like, that's annoying, man. And he's like, oh, yeah, my bad, Dad. You know, like, yeah. who's supposed to tell the guy? Like, yeah. at least I do it with love, and I'm not right. some dude at school that's like, hey, shut up, you know?
Yeah.
It's just terrible. I see that all the time. People talking about, and here's the thing, dude. I take mine with me every day. Wherever I go, they're like good dogs, you know? And yep. My oldest is now, he's in first grade, and he goes to the school here in town, and I hate it. I right. hate it. I hate dropping them off, and it ain't because they're doing a bad job. They, right. they're doing a good job. But, dude, he is handy to have around. Like, mm-hmm. if you take him to work, he is useful. Like, he does stuff to be helpful, you know?
Yep.
And I'm like, I'm dropping my best dang help off over here to learn how to read, you know? Right. I keep telling my wife, I'm like, third grade, that's it. Once everybody gets phones, he's coming with me every day that we're done. Because I do appreciate that they're teaching him how to read. I do appreciate this. And my wife's goal, our goal was to get her home, and through some financial struggles, she started her own business. And now that has just freaking exploded, which is a gift from God. But she ain't at home, you know. And so the little one comes with me till about 1, and then I take him to her office to take a nap. And but I don't understand having the mentality any other way other than the way that you look at it. Because I'm over here like, I got 310, I got 310 EDU, I got clinics all over the place. And then this podcast, and I still got my youngest. I'm like, come on now, let's go. Let's go. You're doing it too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I want to plant seeds for anybody. And so mm-hmm. what I would say, Dalton, is that you already see it, and the Lord is already working on you as mm-hmm. far as your desire to be with your children and your desire to train them. And so part of how we got there scripturally is Deuteronomy 6:5-7 says, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk around along the road, and when you lie down and when you get up. And so when is that? That's all the time. That's all the time. That's not at breakfast for a little bit and ship them off. And then you see them in the evening for a little bit and you try to recount and regroup and as far as, well, what happened to you today and what'd you learn today and who influenced you today? Because there's flat out, there's no way that there's enough time to capture all of that and dive into all of that. And as they go along, we're all sinful. We all have rebellion. So as we go along, there's going to be things that they omit as they tell us about their day.
Yes.
And so it's not our job to protect them from, like, shield them from the world in a sense that they're incapable of living in it. But it's our job to protect them and disciple them so that they are prepared to deal with a culture that is by and large abrasive against Christ. So, and we're like, I hear you on the busy thing. We seems like the list never ends. And I know finances seem like a struggle for a lot of people who want to consider homeschooling and things. And, I'm telling you, the Lord will provide that, I guess, for anybody listening that, my wife probably gets, I don't even know, like 8 1099s. At least she works in capacities in a variety of ways. And we are busy, but we try to shield that time of school in the morning. And the cool thing is, like you're saying, we're done. They're done with school. And a lot of times my older boys learn the rhythm and they're getting up and at them and doing school. Particularly if they know I've got something going on that they want to be a part of, they're getting at it on their own before breakfast.
Yeah. But they're, we got some yearlings of doctor, baby.
By noon, 12:30.
Yeah.
And we get a bite and then depending on what's happening, they're coming with me. And, and I plan some of my jobs around that fact, honestly. I get other stuff done in the morning and then, just enjoy a continual form of education about life then in the afternoon. And and they're handy. They're good help.
Well, it's tough to combat a lie you don't know happened, right? And you got the world speaking lies into your children all day long. It's just lie after lie. And the key, one of the keys for me growing up, you know, was learning to speak truth to the lie. What's the lie and what's the truth? And your discernment as a kid doesn't exist. I mean, they just know somebody's being a jerk, you know? And so I find myself speaking a lot of truth into my son. It's like, and what's crazy is they're born with some of these lies, like the fear-based, just, I'm scared of stuff. Nobody taught you to be scared of anything. Right. And, like 2 Timothy 1:7, dude, it's everywhere around here. Like we talk about that verse every day. It's like, we do not have a spirit of fear, but a power, love, and self-discipline. Let's go to work, you know? And so it's challenging. And me and Kara, like for us, as far as money's concerned and like how to make it happen, when we had Wiley, our concern was someone staying home with him. And for the first 2 years, it was me. I worked for 3-10 for free for the first 2 years to get it off the ground. And Kara went and made all the money. And it sucked. Being a stay-at-home mom was not my that's not my calling. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. but it's what was required to not send my 3-pound, 2-ounce baby to somebody down the road to raise for me.
Yeah.
And so I did it. God bless him. That boy, whoo, he's going to be a tough sucker because it was rough on that dude. But I'm telling you, Mr. Mom was not Mr. Mommin. But yeah, man, it's all that matters, dude. It's the king, it's your family. And then if you got those two things in line, then you can go out into the world and love people. But
right.
he gave you this small group of people to love dearly and like to steward. And if you got that going your way, man, you can really have an effect on a lot of people around you. Just based on your bride and how she treats you and acts, and just based on your children and how they respect you and obey, and the people around you. I coach my oldest in baseball, and I've had other parents say to me, "Can I send my kid with you?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you can come too." Yeah, uh-huh. Well, all y'all come on, let's go. Yeah. We'll tune yeah. on you, and then he'll be easy, you know. And
yeah.
it's and it's just God doing what God does, man. It's just Him loving people through you, and it's a good deal. It's very obvious. Like the light gets lighter, the dark gets darker, and as it all shifts, it's like that's what I want. That's the beautiful part of life. And if your priorities are screwed up, like work, dude, work is something we do to eat. Like, thank God we get to do something fun sometimes and rope and stuff. But, dude, like, work does not matter. I'll do whatever. That is not even on the priority list for me. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah, and I find it, well, I guess in a way, my wife might accuse me of being guilty of this at some points, but it's so common for men to become workaholics and fight the sense of, well, I'm working for my family.
Mm-hmm.
And then not be there for your family. And
it's hiding. I swear it's hiding.
Yeah.
It's easier to go dig a fence post hole than it is to have a hard conversation with your wife. For me.
That's true.
Like, I have to choose. Like, I can dig a hole pretty easy. But, like, sitting down and being intimate with my wife in that way can be, in parts of my life in the past, have been wildly challenging. Like,
yep.
The last thing on earth I want to do is have this conversation with this woman. And I think that's what guys do. They're like, I'm providing. I go to work. That's like bare minimum, dude. Like, you're down here. Like, we got to have money to eat, but you have to meet her emotional needs. Like, you have to. And it's hard. Uh-huh. It's hard to do.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, it is hard.
Does your wife tell you? Does she tell you?
Tell me what now?
Like, if you're, like, slacking or, like, working too much, it's like, hey, man, I need you right here.
So I've thought about this, and I don't know what you call it, but your mantra of work 10 times harder than your wife. Mm-hmm. Man, I don't know how to. My wife works like she is the workingest person I know. And
that's tough.
We're going through Proverbs 31 here. Actually just a night or two ago and two nights ago, I guess, and looking through, and an excellent wife who can find is how it mm-hmm. kind of starts out. And I've got a note in my Bible and me with a smiley face. And, but I go through and yeah. walk through and, we discussed, and like, it's over a lifetime of all those things, but mm-hmm. man, my wife checks a lot of those boxes mm-hmm. as far as up in the morning, and her light doesn't go out at night. And it's because she's prepared. She's, mm-hmm. she's worked, she's got the oil, and literally her light doesn't go out because she doesn't want to sacrifice family time. So she waits till kids are to bed, and then she goes to work on these jobs that she has, mm-hmm. and all these various things. But yeah, I'm telling you, I'm good at working on the ranch, and I'm good at doing quite a few things around just to make life go. But mm-hmm. there's areas that she needs me to lead that I haven't. And she's a strong woman and likes leadership positions. So there's that push and pull tension of she's wanting me to lead. And yet I feel like she's already taken care of that mm-hmm. part. So I move on to other parts, and we've been, like I say, we've been married 22 years, and mm-hmm. I'm still working at getting some of this figured out. But mm-hmm. and she's, like you say, she's super, a lot of women need that communication piece. And I think a matter is good and settled, and I find out that she would value definitely more conversation about stuff. So
mm-hmm. yeah, mine will let me know, dude. She'd be like, hey dude, hey, what's up here? And that was kind of I was a terrible communicator back in the day, and she wasn't. She grew up in a home where her folks didn't fight in front of people. Like, they'd take it to the bedroom or like converse in a reasonable manner. And I didn't. And so my default was to like be obnoxious and angry and holler and act stupid. And she would simply, I mean, this was 10 years ago. She would simply be like, we don't talk to people like that. People that you love, you don't talk to them like that. And it was like over time, my communication changed, you know? And it's interesting because the philosophy, you know, from outworking your wife tenfold, I find myself in a pickle as well. My wife is also an absolute unit. Works really freaking hard. I think it's less of the actual, like the physical, and more of the mindset of like, I'm going to hustle till we're done. And I think a good part of leadership from a husband perspective is understanding when your wife does have it. And you go, you got this dialed up. I'm going to keep on, and we're going to keep pushing to the next thing. And you just, same thing you do at work. If your kid's sorting a bunch of calves and he's got it going his way, you're not going to dive in there and be like, hey, I'm the leader. You know, let me finish this up for you. You're just going to go, hey, dude, great job. Right. Let's on to the next one, you know? And, but it's such a delicate balance of like, they have to choose to follow. You can't just lead your wife. Like, they have to choose to go, okay, you're my husband and I love you and I'm going to follow you and I'm not going to crap on you when your idea goes bad. You know, they have to like choose to be kind in this because we're going to screw up. And my wife's pretty handy at that. It's been a long road to hoe for sure. And she has been very gracious with me because I have been a fool for a long time. You know what I mean?
You're right. Yep.
So leading into that, Roy, you gave your testimony at the His Cabby Roping 4 years ago when we were there. And I honestly, when you reached out and was listening to the podcast and said you wanted to come on, I told Kara, I was like, this is quite the story here. And of course she remembered the story. But if you are willing to share that story a little bit, because I have a whole nother, like you can hear that story from my perspective. And I had thought at the time that I had endured some difficult things. And then you hear a story like that and you're like, I've endured nothing. And I think it's a very hard story to hear, my friend, like from a believer's perspective or a non-believer's perspective. And I can remember sitting in that lodge there in Walden, just crying, like for you. You know what I mean? And yeah, your strength to stand up and tell that story is nothing short of Christ's strength, in my opinion, because I don't think I could do it, you know?
Well, thank you. Neither can I. And so I might cry while I tell it, honestly.
Yeah.
But so we've got four boys, and I always told people that I had an older pair, and then I referenced that my wife had cancer. So we had a gap in kids, mm-hmm. and then we had a younger pair. And sorry, I feel like I'm... Do you still have video, Dalton?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'll ignore mine then. Mine disappeared. So.
Yeah, I got you right here.
All right. So we... In 20, to kind of set the scene, we've got four boys, and in 2021, we were scheduled for transitioning our ranch into where my dad would step back and help us. We had been here essentially working for him, and he had identified this point in time where we would take over. And the business, the decisions, the finances, and he would essentially help us, work for us. But what happened was we started into that, but he had gotten sick. So what happened, though, was, and maybe it was divine, maybe he had, Dad didn't know, but ultimately what happened was, Dad got COVID and was locked away from us for like 19 days in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I say he died from neglect more than he died from the virus.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause when we did get to go in and see him, it was really bad. But so he died, you know, a month after we started the ranch, and
mm-hmm.
with some things that were on the table as far as financially needing to move toward buying my aunt out of some ground.
Mm-hmm.
Dad had a friend that was working for him as well. So we went from three guys on the ranch to me. And at the time, my oldest boys were like 11 and 13.
Mm-hmm.
And, so we went to hustling mm-hmm. and I, you know, grieving and working my tail off for those first 6 months there, was a struggle, and it was a process of grief by itself.
Mm-hmm. How old was your dad?
He was 70.
Okay.
And had been in pretty good shape. He had had a heart attack a few years before, but had been in pretty good shape, you know. And mm-hmm. So it was a little shocking. And I went into the hospital once and asked for a patient bill of rights, which says on it that the patient can have somebody there with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew what room he was in, and I just marched up to his room and sat down and at the time visited with him, and he was looking a lot better with what they had given him to start with. And then it became a pretty big thing. They were going to call the sheriff, who's a friend of ours, and all these things to move me out of there. And Dad didn't want to make a scene at the time. I said, Dad, I'll stay here. I don't mind getting handcuffed if that's where... Like, I believe that people need people. They need yes. somebody. And he said, it's all right. You go on. Don't make it worse. And so I did. And within a day after that, they had giving him remdesivir, and then he went on the vent, and that was pretty much the end. But it was drawn out. So anyway, we went to hustling on the ranch, and my boys, Brandy, you know, worked and helped as well. But those older boys grew up into responsibility so much. And I remember, like, when one of those guys was 3 years old, I had told my mom that I had had him steering the feed truck while I was pitching hay off the back.
Yeah.
And she gave me a hard time about it. And I said, "Mom, there's going to come a day where I need him." And so I'm training him now. And I know you do those types of things. And
no doubt. It's awesome, dude. It's good stuff.
All of a sudden, when I didn't have help, they were my help. When they were 11 and 14, they were, you know, they were baling hay with the round baler, and they were raking hay, and they were, you know, doing all the things, and had a lot of room to grow, had a lot to learn. And, but they were out there doing it. And, man, I'm really proud of them through that. But so that was one version. And the lesson for me, I guess, in that piece that I would tell people is that how important it is for us as men. If you've got something, whether it's a ranch or a business, or even just your household stuff, how important it is to do the business things that are hard, have the conversations that are less fun than some of the other parts of it, probably, to have things set up for transition, because as more story goes along, we just don't know when it's our day. We don't know when the end is coming. We think we've got a lot of time, but good intentions are not adequate when you're walking out the steps of all of a sudden a necessity of generational ranch or business transfer. And so that's kind of a admonishment for all of us to do the things to be able to pass whatever you've got along well, to make it easy for the people who are dealing with it when you're not there. But so that was, we lost Dad in January, and then we got through our calving and branding and all that. And I was feeling really pretty good about things. And, but, to say it bluntly, in June of that year, we lost our littlest boy, who was 26 months old. And Ben was, he was such a joyful, wonderful kid. A friend of ours said, "He's just like a cold foot in a warm sock. He's just happy to be there. Wherever you're at with him, he's just happy to be there."
That's a great illustration.
And he just had this smile and beautiful blue eyes and cotton top head. And, he just was an awesome kid. And he got sick. He was sick for about a week, and that's was enough time that it left room for a lot of questions that swirled in our mind about what we could have done, what we should have done. And the things that we did do, I mean, we were at the hospital. Brandy packed a bag intending to stay, because we said, "This kid needs help. He needs fluids. He's been sick with this virus for a while, and he's getting dehydrated. So what we need is just some, at least at the minimum, we need some fluids."
And now, did he have COVID, or was it something different?
No. he did not. As it turned out, it was a stomach bug.
And a stomach bug. What it
turned out to be was a version of E. coli, mm-hmm. and he died of hemolytic uremic syndrome, which became a blood thing. It was shearing blood cells, and they were abrasively shearing each other and went into kidney failure. And ultimately, rare upon rare upon rare, he ended up having a brain bleed, which shouldn't have happened. But they sent us home because I wasn't wearing a mask in the emergency room because I was holding my child. And they wanted to talk to me more about my mask than about my child. And I'm saying, here, look at this kid. He needs help. And so we come home, and later that afternoon, he starts having seizures in my wife's arms. And like 100 mile an hour trip back to town. We live 30 miles away from town. And, you know, running red lights in front of the city cop, and just doing everything I could to get there, and ended up being like so many slowdowns from there to the point that we finally got him to Children's Hospital in Denver. There was, mm-hmm. you know, supposed to be a helicopter trip and issues there. And all the, so I get bound up in the story, and I'm sorry, this isn't even the part I want to get to, but, the next day, ultimately, we had to make the decision of keeping our child on a machine with the prognosis that he would never leave, that there was too much damage, and so we made the choice that my wife told the doctor, that's not living, that's just not dying.
Mm-hmm.
But having your baby die in your arms is, that broke everything down on my foundation of faith,
mm-hmm.
and like turned me into ultimately I have felt like for a long time a shell of a man that I was before. And just like somehow in my faith, like I've preached a lot of times on the fact that the Lord tells us we will have trouble in this world. I tell those college kids, like, you can't expect that God is going to make your life easy. What you can mm-hmm. expect is that he's going to mold you, and he's going to use a lot of experiences that will be tough. And that if you're doing things for the kingdom, you've got an enemy who doesn't like it. And there's going to mm-hmm. be a lot of war going on in that. But even within that, I had the expectation that God would protect the lives of my family, that there would mm-hmm. be a guard around us, that somehow that would be off limits. And I ultimately, that began a path of extreme turmoil and wrestling with God, where the only place I had peace was getting in the Word and, you know, trying to talk to the Lord. And, but I could immediately go, like, just get on the fight ultimately mm-hmm. with him, and, mm-hmm. feel ultimately like, man, if I can't trust God at the point in my life where I need him the very, very most, And I prayed, and I thought I was praying with faith, but I know I was praying in fear too. But if I can't trust him on those moments when I need him the most, then when can I trust him? Mm-hmm. And that trust part became a huge issue for a long time. But I would be in the Word, and then the next moment or later that day, I became so just resentful and angry. I got sullen and bitter with the Lord, and it was both at the same time. Like, I was struggling with God, and the only place I could get peace is when I would try to spend time with him. But I just would be on the fight with him a lot. And when people would ask me how I was doing, I went through quite a while where I would tell, somebody would ask in a way that you knew they were really asking. It wasn't mm-hmm. just surface level, but what they meant was, how are you doing without your child? Mm-hmm. And my answer for quite a while was, I'm heartbroken. Mm-hmm. And so, which was the truth. When that happens, people deal with grief differently, and everybody experiences it in a different manner. But what I experienced was to the point where you couldn't hardly breathe. Like, you didn't know where your next breath was going. My ambition was gone. My joy was gone. And my aptitude to care about a lot of things was kind of gone. I didn't care about food anymore. I lost 40 pounds in the first year, and which was good, I guess, in some ways. But like, that's the physical aspect of pain, hurting. Mm-hmm. But I began to have pretty regular minor chest pains and feel like some undiagnosed blood pressure issues with all of it. And finally, there was one point where I felt like the Lord was probably telling me, like, hey, man, you've been speaking this heartbroken thing over yourself for quite a while, and you better quit it. And mm-hmm. And I think that was true. I think I that was literally
gonna break for real.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I got to a point where in one of those heart to hearts with Brandy, ultimately I describe myself as simply a placeholder, basically. Like, I'm doing the blessing and the burden of a family ranch, and my ambition is gone, my joy is gone, and what I am is a placeholder to try to get this place wrapped up in a tidier bow for the next mm-hmm. generation, the fifth generation, than it was for me. And that's all I've got, is to try to get that much done. And so as you struggle with grief, there's, I kind of said it earlier, but there's so many questions that when you're wrestling out this faith thing of why God, and, you know, if I had done this, and is it my fault? And if we had gone to the doctor sooner, you know, if we live somewhere else, it was an E. coli deal. So one of the difficult parts is, did my son die because I ranch? Like, mm-hmm. we're around cattle manure all the time. That's mm-hmm. part of the deal. And so if I had been less selfish about what I like to do, and I had worked at Walmart or something instead, would my child be alive? Mm-hmm. And you go down all these rabbit trails, and did I not pray with belief enough? and things like that. And so I think what I'd like to do, Dalton, is share a dabble in a little bit of cowboy poetry. Just a little bit. And I'd like to share a poem that is not a great literary work by any means. It was, I made it sometime in that first year. And there's problems with it. The cadence is wrong and whatnot, but it was where I was at. And if you listen to the phrases in there, they all mean something about where I was at and how I was processing and whatnot. So here goes. It's called A Father's Grief. I awake. Still dark, worn thin, but awake I'll stay. Sorrow will be my constant companion today. Thick and heavy like fog, but my thirst unquenching. Fruit yielded is only broken and heart-wrenching. Grief is cinched on tight. The burden doesn't get lighter. As the days keep passing, it just pulls another notch tighter. It draws out my breath like an oppressive hot wind, like a bullet out of a barrel, unable to rescind. My mind used to be eager to run to the hills, covering the country, daydreaming cowboy thrills. Now it's drawn back in time to a hilltop like a slave, to the day hot and lonely we laid my son in his grave. I head out the door because ranch work never reaches end, hoping in that solitude the Lord to my spirit would attend. The thoughts in my mind swirl, all the questions of if only. Each task now seems meaningless, and the trails I ride are lonely. Harsh reality sets in gradual on all the unmet expectation. The finality is shocking on this unwelcome tribulation. Raising our son and loving him well doesn't seem that much to ask. Yet without him, are we done? Or is it an unfinished task? His mama's arms feel empty, the void more than she can bear. Viewing his pictures and videos to remember, we stare. We ask, why, God, did it have to be this way? Never a good enough answer to not wish my son could stay. My mind circles and frets, refusing to settle. Was it my fault? The question that tests my mettle. I declare it's a lie that time will heal us day by day. Its merciless passage only carries us further away. Boy, my heart's gotten bitter and hard. This wound is so deep, we'll forever be scarred. The walls of this pit are closing in, and I'm in a tight spot. I've let all my rope slide. It's plumb down to the knot. My wild screams of agony outside in the dark of night. No shovel handle is safe while I vent the anger and fight. I ask, where were you, God, when I needed you most? Where were you, God, when I needed you most? Tears flow unbidden, marking this suffering overflow. Deep within me, a root of faith, like a campfire ember glows. Your character is unchanging, Lord. Your promises, I want to believe. It's just so hard to see it here in the deepest pit where I grieve. How do I lead my family through this journey of lament? My cup is drained and empty, and my joy has all been spent. Your invitation is open for all who are burdened and weary. The truth of your scripture I search through eyes that are teary. Though he slay me, I should follow him yet. In spite of these troubles about tomorrow, don't fret. Humility, repentance, and surrender are still the key to entering into the abundant life he has for you and me. To be bold and courageous, and after everything to stand. To be bold and courageous, after everything to stand. As ash returns to ash and dust returns to dust, in spite of it all, Lord, in you I must choose to trust. So, I don't know if that means anything to anybody else, but some of the process that I walked through, you know, trying to, the stages of grief deal is not, prior to experiencing it, I thought it was linear. And I found out that you experience grief and you bounce around through the different stages, and that that can be ongoing. Ultimately, it's not something that you get over. We had someone, and I don't know the person, someone told a friend of ours, Winter Gillum's going to get over this, ultimately was what they said. And I mean, if I would have known who they were, I would have been real happy to reach through the phone and choke them. Like, we're not the type of people that compartmentalize this. It's like the backside of the coin on every moment of life from now on. It's not, we still have four suns, but we've got three earth side. And I tried it out for, because it was an easy answer once. I told somebody that we had three sons just in a meet and greet thing. And it felt so uncomfortable that I said, I'm never doing that again. If they're uncomfortable after I answer this question, that's their deal.
Yeah.
I struggled to get through not just being angry and sullen. And it was not a good thing. I should have gotten through it faster. But I mean, I was hard on horses at times. I didn't have the same softness. I didn't have what I wanted. And, you know, that was healing to me at times to be horseback, but my patience was not the same. And, I was harder on my wife and my children than I used to be. And so God worked on me in that deal. Proverbs 29:22 says, a man of wrath stirs up strife, and one given to anger causes transgression. And so, I don't know, did you see that? If you saw that, not only is his anger a personal problem, but he stirs up more strife and he causes others to be in transgression. And so that was a, maybe still is, an ongoing battle. But, and went through a time I talked to you about, just an apathy, essentially, of like, felt like I was doing all I could do, just live life, get through the days, do what needed done. And I was, but I wasn't the same. And, honestly, I found out recently, actually, that Brandy's ambitious, but part of the reason that she has taken on some extra jobs, partly it's fulfilling to her, but a part of it was that she told me she was worried that I was so broken that I wasn't going to come back. And wasn't necessarily going to be able to provide. I don't know if that's part of what has snapped me out of it. And I don't know if I snapped out of it, but just a process of turmoil and wrestling with the Lord, working on getting out of it. But getting to the point where I can choose joy again, like I just didn't care to choose joy. Or I would like touch the surface of it and enjoy a moment, but then the sadness on the other side was even bigger, it seemed like. And but I had a horse I sold one time called Scar, and he had this huge wire cut as like a yearling on his neck and big old divot out of one side of his neck, and it was all healed over, haired over, and functionally he was pretty much fine. And I think about that in relationship to me, and my wife and I have talked about Jacob wrestling with God and coming away with a limp. And we've talked about what we have is a heart limp, or a, I don't know what you call it necessarily, if that's right, but something that people who see us, hopefully I'm getting to a point where people who see me don't recognize that I'm just a man of sorrow and depression. But it's an internal thing that we have, and we learn to carry better over time. We learn to live with it better and have more value, more. And so probably the two biggest lessons that I've learned going through this is trust of the Lord has been really tough for me. And then eternal perspective, being able to view the life that is like, this is what we experience. And this seems like our total in all everything reality. But, trusting the Lord with this piece of it and making this piece of it count eternally is my goal now. And so like I may have shared that time in Walden, I don't know, but battling this trust thing out, and it wasn't just like a light switch necessarily, but I remember one time I was duking it out with the Lord and running behind, and I needed to go change irrigation water, and it was getting dark, but I stopped and I called a good friend of mine, Kyle Berger, and said, man, you got to pray for me right now, because I'm ready to chuck my relationship with God. I do not see what he's doing. And I don't know if I care to have a relationship with a God who I can't trust. And I know I need to, so I need some help. I need some prayer warrior backup. And so I went out and I'm putting out this, changing an irrigation dam, and it's after dark now and moon's shining. And ultimately I break down. I'm on my knees in the flood water, just crying out to God, saying, God, like, you were willing to put out the fleece. You're willing to make the fleece wet and then dry and answer all these questions to prove that you care and prove that you're on the right side before this battle. And I need a sign. That's where I'm at. I need to know that you care. I need to know that you're there. And he did not. It was silent. There wasn't a loud voice. There wasn't a flash of light. There wasn't a quiet voice to my heart. And Man, I got up so mad, and I refrained from breaking that shovel handle because I needed it still for my irrigation. But I remember being so mad, and I'm like walking away, fine, God. That's the way it is. It's all on me, and I know I can't obviously do everything and protect my family, but it's all on me. And as I walked away, I felt like he told me, trusting is a choice, the same as coming to salvation. I'm offering it. I'm here for you. And you've got to trust me in the life you have. And you got to trust me with the eternity where you will still experience Ben. And so I spent a lot of time in Psalm 71, and it says, though you have made me see many troubles, or though you have made me see troubles many and bitter, you will restore my life again. From the depths of the earth, you will again bring me up. You will increase my honor and comfort me once again. And believing those things and believing that God will show his goodness here in the land of the living, sometimes I got to make that choice every day. Because it still is not, I would not choose this. I would not. There's no reason on earth that I can think of being worth losing my child. No matter when I have conversations and when I do this, and I know it's going to help somebody, that is healing. It's helpful, and it's never worth it. For myself as a father, but finding those points in scripture where it tells you of God's goodness and tells you that God is your fortress and you can look forward to the hope of heaven is a very, very big deal. Like we put a lot of hope in our abilities, our skills, in the stock market, in, you know, whatever, relationships. And ultimately getting to that point where you can trust God in the struggle and you can hope and have that confident expectation of a guaranteed result based on God's word is what has helped me to get there, and helped me to think of my life, helped me to think of my child's life and our purpose, ultimately, that we have purpose in heaven still. Like we're supposed to do work here, but there's going to be purpose for us in heaven. And because like I was thankful for the future of heaven before, but I wasn't excited about it. There's a lot of things that I thought I wanted to do here. And I'm excited about heaven. There's things I need to get done and prepare well here, but I need to get more excited about seeing Jesus. At this point still, I'm probably most excited to be able to hold my son again. And because when you lose a baby or one of those little guys that you hold all the time, there is an extreme void of being able to scoop them up and feel the weight of them in your arms. And that was the point where God really, I feel like, spoke to me about trust. And like I say, it's not a switch where I just moved forward and like, hey, this is I learned it, and mm-hmm. it's all good.
No,
it's still a struggle. I sing hymns or praise songs. There's a couple of hymns that are a real struggle. I learned about what it means. I don't know where it is, but there's a verse that talks about the sacrifice of praise, and I never understood what it was because I liked praise and worship time before, but after Ben died, I could not sing. I mm-hmm. didn't want to sing. Mm-hmm. I sat there and cried. I stood there and cried during service. And then hymns would come up like, "It is well with my soul." And I'm sitting there fuming like, "It is not well. It is, mm-hmm. I don't, it's not good." And mm-hmm. so coming to understanding of how something cannot be good and God still is good. Mm-hmm. And when it doesn't seem good here, but it is, he's going to use it for good, and resting in the fact that we may not know all of it until we get to heaven. We just aren't. It's part of the struggle, part of the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's for the kingdom.
Yeah.
It has to be. So
we just recently, so I've been teaching my 8-year-old Waitley how to drive the rake tractor all summer. And we do not drive nice new equipment. I rake on an old open cab 3020 tractor. And he was telling me partway through the summer he thought he could do it. And I'm like, "I don't know. I don't know if we're there yet." And so I said, "All right, there's a few things I need to teach you before I can just turn you loose." And so I start riding over on the fender instead of in the seat.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start throwing questions at him of, "Oh no, the tractor's smoking. What do you do?" Or, "The wheel fell off. What do you do?"
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting pretty good at being able to handle stuff. And so not all that long ago, I was sitting on the fender and he was doing the job.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm enjoying him and kind of just missing Ben and missing my expectation of what should have been to be able to train another one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I start into it again with the Lord a little bit in just emotional turmoil. And I'm like, "Man, God, I would have died for my son. If there had been any way, some physical danger, mm-hmm. I would have died for him. I would have saved him." And I've got a couple of really good friends who would have stepped in and died for Ben if they could have.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, just, "Where were you, God?" Mm-hmm. And man, this sounds foolish because I preach the gospel fairly often.
Mm-hmm.
But on that afternoon, in my heart, God said, "I was there, Roy. I did die for your son. I sent my son to die for your son."
Mm-hmm.
And I mean to tell you, Dalton, it pricked my heart in a way that I haven't felt the reality of the gospel before.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wrote it and I wanted to say it that way because it was pretty good, but ultimately that he died the way that I wanted to in my own father heart for my child.
Mm-hmm.
He did that.
That is all I could think about when you were just talking, is that you have an understanding of the King's heart for us more so than most people that'll ever walk the face of the planet. Because I've said on multiple occasions on this podcast, I wouldn't hang Wiley on a cross for my own mother.
I know it.
And he hung his kid up there so that we could die and be with him, so that we could have a relationship with him. And the amount of love that you can exude for the kingdom because of the experiences you've experienced, even though it is quite literally my worst freaking nightmare, because you understand the Father's pain. Literally. Literally. It's unbelievable. Like, the whole time you were just talking about teaching your older one, I was thinking to myself, this guy understands God's heart for me more than I ever will. Maybe. Because our children are not ours. They're his. And both of mine came into the world in a way that was very scary. And they should not have been here. I mean, Waylon was almost accidentally aborted. Wiley was 9 weeks early. And when they came out, I was like, God, these are yours. I cannot save them from whatever the world has. I'm going to do what you tell me to do. And, but man, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And the fact that you keep teaching, unbelievable, man.
Well, and that's an attack of the enemy too. Many times I feel inadequate, mm-hmm. as I have wrestled with the Lord on, even in the same day where I'm preparing a message to give to college kids. Sometimes mm-hmm. the devil's telling me, man, what are you doing? You don't, mm-hmm.
I feel that. I feel that.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel that.
And it's just a process, man. We keep working at it. And I think it's important for me to continue to try. It has been important for me to have a reason to dive into scripture and study, mm-hmm. because there was, and at times, you know, the temptation to chuck my relationship with God. I don't know that I was ever truly suicidal, but I got to the point where I could see the temptation of it. I could mm-hmm. kind of understand that.
Oh, I definitely, I'm not gonna, but I could be done. I could just be done. You know what I mean? Like, I could not wake up tomorrow and be okay. I have definitely mm-hmm. had that thought. And yeah. It's the failures are failures. And this is the spot I've come to with the enemy, dude. Our failures are opportunities to learn. They're not our identity. Our identity comes from Christ. That's who he knitted in the womb. Okay. Who he right. built in the womb for us to be is our identity. Our failures are simply opportunities to learn from the King. That's it. And there's not a one of us getting out of here without a copious amounts of failure. Right. It's how you choose to learn from it, right? And so the question is, God, what are you teaching me? And then what do you want me to do? Let's go, you know? And the enemy is so good at lying. Like, he is such a freaking sorry sucker. He is just a lying piece of garbage. And that's how he gets us. Men, women, children, all of us. The fear and the lie, the fear that comes, or the lie that comes from the fear that just destroys your purpose right. in life. And yeah. so he takes a guy like you or a guy like me, who's trying really damn hard to do a good job. And he says, you're garbage. I can't believe you're telling these people all of your junk. Like, who does that? And my eyebrow raises is when you got a believer that doesn't say anything about his junk. It's like, hey, you don't have any junk, so why do you go to the king? So if you never share it, the guy down the road's like, well, you're perfect. That's easy, you know? And it doesn't work. And so you give a people a look into your life through a podcast, through a talk, through shaking their hand or whatever, and you say, hey, man, I'm Dalton. I'm basically a giant piece of shit, but man, I love Jesus and I'm working on it. And then that guy comes in the trench with you and goes, hey, me too. It's like, okay, well, let's try to be friends and love Jesus and raise our families and freaking grind. That's what this whole thing is. I preached at a cowboy church this weekend. The whole time I was standing up there, I was like, what are you doing up here, man? what is going on, you know? But that's the thing, dude, is that's the lie. That's the lie, is that the failure defines you, and it doesn't.
Right. And so the whole time we've done any form of ministry, Brandy and I have really felt strongly that it's important to be authentic and share true testimony. In Revelations, it talks about overcoming the devil by the word of God and your testimony. Because people can argue and, you know, circle around theology, but it's hard to argue with testimony that you have seen, like firsthand witnesses of you've seen God do something actionable in life or in your participation in life.
Well, that was the battle of the Pharisees versus Jesus. Jesus, testimony. Pharisee, trying to figure out what the book means. Arguing about what the book means versus that dude just told that guy to get up and walk, man. I think I'm going with him. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's so silly when you look at it in that way. You're like, I had a discussion this morning with a really good friend of mine about this. And he was talking to this young gal who's a liberal and yada, yada, yada. And he's giving her the what for on what the Bible says. And I was like, man, you're making it too complicated. Like people who don't believe don't understand. It's like she doesn't know her identity. She believes a lie about herself, and she doesn't know that God loves her more than anything in the whole wide world. Just start there. Like all this other bullcrap, whether you got to be baptized to be saved or freaking what the law says and all that. Like, forget all that. Just love God, love your neighbor, and freaking quit sinning. There you go. If you know it's wrong, don't do it, dadgummit. Like now, once you start there and then you start seeking God's heart for you, that's when you go, hey, I really want to be like this guy. I would really like to be more like Christ because he's my role model. And that's when you see all the other, like when you get into the scripture and stuff, you start getting into the minutia and trying to figure it out. But that's not the starting point, man. Like simplify it. Like make it easy for them, you know? For me too. For me too. Like that's what helped me become just like, okay, James 4:17, if you know it's wrong, it's a sin for you. Okay, that's good. I got it. That's make the right thing easy, the wrong thing hard. Okay, keep it pushing, you know? So, man, Roy, I cannot tell you how thankful I am you came on, man. Your story, especially in the time of life that I'm in, it's unbelievable to me, man, that just to know that there's someone else with me in the trench that is like, his plan is good, even though it feels just terrible. That I don't even know how to tell you it's good without just saying God is good, you know? I got a 3-year-old 3 rooms over screaming at the top of his lungs at the moment. I hope you can't hear it.
No, I can't.
Good. Good. But I just, gosh, man, unbelievable. And hopefully, I'll be out in your neck of the woods sooner rather than later. Hopefully during the hot times of the year down here.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We'd be glad to have you. for sure.
I'm telling you.
So, yeah, those, I guess the lessons of really, really choosing to enjoy fatherhood in the moments, like when your kid is screaming and and things, but you never ever regret the time that you spend with your kids. It's something that Brandy and I say a lot. We battle to be intentional with the boys that we have here still. And so it's, I mean, there's a lot of lessons that we can all keep sharing, I'm sure, but that's kind of the basis of where God has, those are the big things that God has brought us through at the moment. And so, and really, well, I could say being the man that you want your kids to become, like those lessons of rewarding the try to give, relate it back to horsemanship principles. There's so many things that fit together of, being consistent and really just loving on them. Like for some guys, that's really hard. Maybe they didn't have a father that did, but like telling your kid or actually hugging your kid and actually spending time with them at the things that, you know, bring them with you to what you're doing, and also balancing, like, get down on the floor if they're still only 3 feet tall and do what they're doing. That's important. But
I agree. I deeply agree. Well, Roy, we will have to do this again, my man, because that story isn't over.
Yeah, there's more to it. I really appreciate you having me on.
Oh, dude, you bet. Anytime. Anytime. Next time I'll take Waylon to nap somewhere else. This guy. Man. Well, guys, as always, this is our goal is to share, to help whoever down the road. And God always seems to let these episodes find who they need. And I sure do pray this one does, because the hurt is shared. So if you need me, Dalton@310edu.com is my email address. And I will have Roy's wife's podcast linked in the description so y'all can check that out. And Roy, thank you so much for coming on, man. I sure do appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Yep. Very good. I appreciate it.